the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
They say a picture is worth a thousand words. I think it's absolutely true. When you're trying to describe something, I don't know if you've ever played those games where you've got to describe something, you're not allowed to use the word or draw it, or say just, you just have to use words. And sometimes it can be very difficult to explain what something is without actually seeing it. If you can try a few. A sandwich consisting of a fried cake of minced beef served in a bun, often with other ingredients. Probably guess what that is. But it doesn't give you a feel for what it really is, does it? Now, some of you think, great, that looks delicious. Others will think, oh, crikey, yes. Let's move on. How about this one? A large, voracious reptile having a long snout, massive jaws, sharp teeth, and a body covered with bony plates. Sluggish tropical waters. And that gives you an idea what it might be. But it wouldn't give you a real, you know. Seeing it in reality is a bit different from hearing it described. How about this one? Golden yellow flowers, milky white juice. In spring, the tender young leaves are used for eating, for table greens. Dandelions. You can allegedly eat the leaves. I've never eaten the leaves of a dandelion, so don't think that's what I get served up at home, but you can eat the dandelion leaves. And for those of you who are feeling very smug and think you've got them all right, so far, how about this one? Any mathematicians in the room tonight? X equals R cos B times T. Y equals R sine B times T. Z equals some constant C times T. I think T is time, if that helps you at all. Yeah. Derek's got it. Any takers? God. It's a helix, a spiral. Obvious, really, isn't it? Well, I thought it was obvious when I saw the answer. Well, this evening we're going to be looking at a whole series of starting a series on parables about the kingdom. And rather than defining what the kingdom of God is, the kingdom of heaven is, we're going to look at some illustrations. That's how Jesus did it. Rather than writing and saying, this is what the kingdom of heaven is, he used a series of pictures, a series of illustrations to say, this is what the kingdom of heaven is like. And I think that's so important for us, that if you've ever read a sort of a theological book and seen some of the definitions, it strips out all the vitality and the energy of what it's trying to describe. In a sense, you dissect something, and when you dissect it, you kill it. And that can be true sometimes with words like grace and the kingdom of heaven. But by digging down and dissecting them, you lose all the energy and excitement and the vitality of what they are. And that's what Jesus was doing when he described them. So over the next few weeks, we're going to be looking at tonight the parable of the vineyard, parable of the hidden treasure, parable of the banquet, parable of the wedding, and the parable of the talents. And tonight we're going to start on the parable of the vineyard. But before we do that, let's just think of a quick think about parables. Because Jesus used parables all through his ministry. It even says in one of the Gospels, he didn't speak at all without using parables. Now, a parables can be very effective, very powerful images taken from everyday life. But this is what Jesus said. When he was alone, the 12 and the others around him asked about the parables. He told them, "The secret of the kingdom of God has been given to you, but to those on the outside, everything is said in parables, so that they may be ever seeing but never perceiving, and ever hearing but never understanding. Otherwise they might turn and be forgiven." Now, here I am at the front trying to tell you about a parable that Jesus told, and Jesus in his own words says, "I'm telling you it in a parable so that you may be may be ever seeing but never perceiving, ever hearing but never understanding." If Jesus says that about parables, where does that leave me? Well, let me tell you, parables are a lot more than a simple illustration. Illustrations are great. If you're a preacher, you use them all the time because it's what sticks in people's minds. In fact, a good illustration, unfortunately, sticks in people's minds the most of the sermon. And I can promise you that some people will come up to a preacher after the sermon and will talk to you about the illustration you've used, but not about the point or the passage or the application. Because the illustrations stick in your mind. But the parables of Jesus are a lot more than just illustrations. They're designed to bring us to a point of decision. They're designed by Jesus to confront us with the truth of who he is, the reality of his kingdom, and the call on our life of his kingdom. Jesus puts before us the demands of the kingdom. And because the demands are put before us, there's a choice. You go one way or you go the other. You go into the kingdom or you turn your back on the kingdom. And that's what Jesus is saying. The parables bring people to that point of decision. A decision is made. Do you go into the kingdom or do you turn your back on the kingdom? Rebecca Manley Pippitt, in her book Out of a Salt Shaker about evangelism, if you're a certain age, my sort of age, that was the textbook amongst students on evangelism. I guess it's probably moved on now because there's blank looks amongst the younger people in the audience. But she told this very telling illustration. There she was, an American university, bringing people, some of them were quite nominal Christians, into a Bible study group. And some had become Christians. And one of these young girls became a Christian and decided she needed to change her life around. She was living with a boyfriend. She wasn't following God in any way. She became a Christian and said, no, I've got to start going God's way. So she packed her bags, left her boyfriend, moved back into hall. And this was such a powerful illustration of the demands of the gospel that one person actually turned their back on God because of it. If that's what it means to be a Christian, if that's the demand of God in my life, I don't want anything to do with it. And it's the same with these parables. These parables aren't just nice illustrations. They can be quite confusing, quite challenging. And it's very much true with the one we're going to look at tonight. So if you've got a Bible with you, you might like to turn to Matthew chapter 20. And I think that's page 934 in the pew Bibles in front of you. I'm going to start reading on the first verse on the previous page, but if you keep your finger in 934 rather than flicking over, I'm going to start on the last verse of 19. But many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, you also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right. So they went. He went out again about noon, and about 3 in the afternoon, and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, why have you been standing here all day long, doing nothing? Because no one has hired us, they answered. He said to them, you also go and work in my vineyard. When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his supervisor, call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first. The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came, and each received a denarius. So when those came who were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. These men who were hired last worked only 1 hour, they said. And you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat of the day. But he answered, one of them, friend, I am not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give to the one who's hired last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. We've got a situation which has been familiar to many of the people who listen to Jesus. It's harvest time. And at harvest time, owner of a vineyard needs people to pick his harvest. So he goes out, and they're casual workers. They get paid by the day. They don't work. They don't eat because they don't get paid. No social security, no benefits for them. So he goes into the marketplace and hires some. And they start early in the morning. And it is hard work. I don't know if anyone here has done any fruit picking, proper, not just pick your own, but proper fruit, commercial fruit picking. But it is hard work. I don't speak from experience. Jill, my wife, did that when she was young, wanted to earn some money when she was a student. And it was very hard work. She did blackcurrants. And she had this big, big bucket, and I've forgotten what they were paid, but it's pence per bucket, and busy picking it and filling them. Of course, professionals, if you like, if you want to call them that, they could fill a bucket in no time. But as someone who's not used to it, it took forever, all through the day, just to make a few pence. She only went one day, never went again after that. But it is hard work, hard physical work. And these workers, they're hard at the beginning of the day, and he offers to pay one denarius. Perfectly acceptable pay. That's a day's wage. It's about what a soldier in those times would earn in a day. So pretty reasonable pay. That's fine. We'll work for you all day. And they work through the day. And this owner comes in again. And all through the day, as you see through this, he goes in again and says, come on, some more people to work. And he doesn't say how much he's going to pay them. Just come on and work. And of course, they seem grateful for the job, a chance to earn some money. Maybe not a full day's wage, but some money. Right up to 5 o'clock, an hour before knocking off time. What on earth is the point of doing that? If you did it nowadays, you wouldn't get to the health and safety induction, would you, in that hour? You wouldn't even start work. But there they go. They go into the vineyard and they do an hour's work. That's fine. End of the day comes. They know they're going to get paid. That's what the law demanded. The workman should be paid at the end of his day so he could go out and buy his food, get some shelter, look after himself and his family. But this is where the sting in the tale comes in. And this is where the parable takes a twist. It's no longer just a nice illustration. It's starting to get pointed. Because they get paid at the end of the day. And they get paid the same amount. And if you're like me, and you've been a Christian for a number of years, and you've read this parable a number of times, it's so easy to lose the impact. It just is not right. Some people have worked all day, done the majority of the work, in the heat of the day. Look what it was like outside today. Imagine working all the way through from morning till dusk to round about now. And you come to the end of the day, and not only have you worked today, you have to wait till these Johnny come latelys get paid first. You see, they get paid, and you think, well, this looks good. They've got paid a denarius. I should do pretty well. And what do you get? You get exactly the same. And we need to get that feeling inside of us. This doesn't feel right. This doesn't work in any sense, in any way, in any justice that we would have in our own lives. And just think how we might feel. It seems so unfair. And of course, the audience in those days realized that Jesus isn't making a point about industrial relations. He isn't making a point about a fair pay. He isn't making a point about a living wage. But he's making a point about the kingdom. There's something here about the kingdom. So why did Jesus use this parable? Why did Jesus make this point? Well, to do that, you need to flick back into the previous chapter, which is why I started in the last verse. And you see a couple of incidents there. The first one is down in verse 13. And we see little children are coming to Jesus. And the disciples say, look, little children, they've got nothing to offer our mission. What are they? They've got no power, no money, no influence. Just send them away. And Jesus says, no, don't send them away. Bring them in. And a little bit later, down in verse 16, we see the rich young man. He comes in. He's got everything, absolutely everything. He's got money. He's moral. He's got influence. He's called a ruler. He's got everything that Jesus' disciples could possibly want to further Jesus' mission. And what happens to him? He walks away. And Jesus finishes by saying in verse 30, in chapter 19, but many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. And he repeats those very verses, very words, through into chapter 20 and verse 16 at the end of this parable. So the last will be first, and the first will be last. The values of the kingdom are not the same as our values. God's values are not the same as ours. And what we expect to be first will end up last, and what we expect to be last will be first. Those people who are first in the world, those maybe with money or skills or influence, does God look at that and say, great, you'll be first in my kingdom? No, he doesn't. And there'll be those we might look down on, those who've got no money, no position of authority or power, just the ordinary people. And maybe they will become first. I heard a story a long time ago from an evangelist, and he said he went to a town, and for some reason, it was exceptionally successful, particularly among young people. There's lots and lots of people gave their lives and went from darkness into light, came into the kingdom. And he said it was only later that he found out in that town there had been one individual who had no role or ministry in the church. She in fact, was a nobody. But she had spent years praying that God would touch the young people in the town. And the evangelist attributed all that success to that one individual. A nobody. But maybe she'll be first in the kingdom. Because God's values aren't the same as ours. And we've got these two groups. We've got those who came in at the beginning and those who came in at the end. We've like, who are we? We have to come to a decision. Well, let's look at the first group, the early birds. They worked all day. They went through the heat of the day. And they missed out. They just got what they'd earned. They got one denarius. It's what they agreed to work for. But they felt, it's not fair. And isn't that an emotion that we all experience right from our youth? And some people, you know, like if you've got children, my children are like this, I hasten to add, my children were absolutely fine. But some children are just like that. It's not fair. They will always point out what other people have got. They get more pocket money. They're allowed to stay up later. They have better holidays. I'll stop there in case they give me the evil eye. But there's a sense that we're like that as adults. We always look at other people and say, it's not fair. Why do they deserve to have that? What have they done to deserve that promotion? I've seen that at work. People get promoted and you think, well, they're no good. How come they got that job? We don't tend to turn that around and say, how come I got the job I'm in? Am I any good? We always look at other people and say, it's not fair. And that sense of justice goes very deep. Sometimes I think it's probably justified. A number of years ago, there was a lot of concern when a convicted rapist in prison on a day release bought a lottery ticket and won £7 million. That is not fair. That is not just. We all have that sense of justice and what is right. And maybe sometimes we've got to look at our own lives and say, what's right for me? How does this affect me? What am I doing? Not looking at others. And maybe Jesus is saying to us, look in your own life. Are you upset sometimes by the things that others have that because I'm a gracious, loving God, I've just given them? Let me give you some examples. Maybe you see somebody who's got some material blessings and you look at that and think, why have they got those and I haven't? I've worked hard. I've worked all my life. And maybe danger of losing your job or have lost your job. Why has that happened? And this other person just seems to sail through life without effort or work, but still they manage to make money. Maybe somebody else's life, you see somebody who's got a ministry in the church. Somebody has got something where God is using them. And you look at their lives and say, but their life just does not measure up. And you maybe even know some sin in their life and say, how come God blesses their ministry when they're sinful? When they're not right with him. Maybe sometimes it's even down to some of the new Christians. You see a new Christian and they are so full of joy, so full of excitement, the bubbling over because they're in the kingdom. And do we look at them sometimes and think, oh, well, they'll grow out of it and try and put them down? Maybe sometimes when somebody becomes a Christian, they have this string of answered prayers. One after another. I've seen it in people who have become Christian. They seem to have, at the start of their Christian life, they seem to have one answered prayer after the other. And sometimes I look in my own life and I think, that's not happening to me. Maybe we can feel jealous of them. Or maybe you're struggling with a particular sin. Maybe all through your life, you've been praying about it, seeking God's help, calling out to him, say, Lord, release me. And somebody else just prays once and they're set free. Why? We sometimes can feel jealous of the blessings others receive because God is a gracious God. And I think the words of the owner of the vineyard are the words of Jesus and the words for us. If you're ever tempted to feel like that about others, Jesus says through this parable, "Friend, I'm not being unfair to you. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give to the one who's hard last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?" God is generous. God gives when we don't deserve it. Well, it's early birds, but also the latecomers. The people who come along, particularly the people who come along at 5 o'clock, an hour before knocking off. They're the ones at the end of the day. And to be honest, I think this is probably much more likely to be us. We naturally think about ourselves as the early birds. We're the ones who put all the work in. We're the ones who start at the beginning of the day. I think if you looked around God's kingdom, around this world, and you compared what we're like to how Christians around the world are behaving, then maybe we wouldn't think of ourselves as the early birds. Think of the church in China we've heard about tonight already. What they have to go through. But still, they're on fire and passionate for God. You think about the persecution that Christians around the world suffer, and still they seek to reach out to others. Think of the poverty that many suffer, and still they give and give and give. I remember somebody I knew quite well. She went across to Africa at a short-term mission work, and she was perfectly comfortable in the UK. She was had her own house, was not wealthy, but well off. And she was so struck by the fact that when she went to this church, they took up a collection to help pay for her petrol to get back into town. A church which had nothing. And I think sometimes we compare ourselves too readily to those early birds and not enough to the latecomers. This is how Philip Yancey puts it in his book, What's So Amazing About Grace. Many Christians who study this parable, that's the one we're looking at, who study this parable identify with the employees who put in a full day's work rather than the add-ons at the end of the day. We like to think of ourselves as responsible workers, and the employer's strange behaviour baffles us as it did the original hearers. We risk missing the story's point, that God dispenses gifts, not wages. None of us gets paid according to merit, for none of us comes close to satisfying God's requirements for a perfect life. If paid on the basis of fairness, we would all end up in hell. God does not treat us as we deserve. Thank the Lord for that. God does not treat us as we deserve. And we should be grateful every day for that. God has been generous. As one commentator put it, some were treated with unreasonable generosity. This is what the kingdom of heaven is like. God's grace is not limited by our ideas of fairness. We're so focused on our ideas of fairness, of getting what we deserve, we miss the majesty, the grandeur, the greatness of God's goodness and his giving. We miss grace. And this is one gentleman who didn't miss God's grace. This is John Newton. I think it's the only portrait taken later in life. But when he was a young man, he was far from God. He was rebellious. He was kicked out of the Navy, transferred from ship to ship, ended up as a slave trader in West Africa. And his life went in a downward spiral, down and down. And he encouraged others to profane and to turn their backs on God. And he ended up as a virtual slave himself. He's working on a slave plantation, if you like, in West Africa, helping one of the slave traders there. And he ended up practically destitute. No one to support him, no one to look after him. In fact, the very slaves he was trading took pity on him and tried to feed him. He was in rags, trying to work just for a bit. It all gone wrong. And the owner of the slave trader he was allegedly working for, but was in practical bondage to, saw him planting out some trees. And he came up to him, saw this man who was a shadow of a man, just in rags, and he said, "Who knows? But by the time these trees grow up and bear fruit, you may go home in England, obtain the command of a ship, and return to reap the fruits of your labours. We see strange things happen sometimes. And all he was doing was mocking, seeing somebody who was down and trying to push him further down. But the amazing thing is that John Newton, through a whole series of adventures, eventually turned himself around because God touched his life. He eventually reached the end, and in the storm in the ocean, turned himself life over to God and became a Christian. And then many years later, he did become a captain of a ship, did return to that very coast, and did eat the fruit of that tree. And that is the position each one of us who is a Christian is in. That we were slaves of sin. We had nothing. We were in rags. Nothing to offer God. Nothing we could be proud of. And as the devil says to us, look at you. You've got nothing. Imagine coming back as the command of a ship. And God says, yes, I'm going to take your life and turn it around. And it's like we can even now pluck the fruit from those trees. We can enjoy what we haven't earned, what we don't deserve. And there's one lesson from John Newton's life. It's that there's however deep, however far you've gone, you haven't gone too far from God. And the other lesson is that no one hasn't gone far enough that they need God's grace. So wherever you see yourself in your life, however you see yourself completely lost and abandoned, God can reach you there. Or maybe you feel fine. Life is okay. I'm all right. What's wrong with me? God died for you as well. Your sin is still just there. Whether it's at the depths or it's in the shallows, each of us needs to reach out to a Saviour. John Newton reached out to a Saviour, and he had a life and a ministry which went on for years afterwards. I don't know whether you're a Christian here tonight or not, but wherever you are stand with God, we just need to reach out to him. And God, in his love and gracious, unmerited favour, will reach down into your lives and give and give and give. God will not treat you as you deserve. He will give and give and give. If you're not a Christian here tonight and you want to talk to me a bit afterwards about what turned John Newton's life around, do come up and chat to me afterwards. And if you are one tonight, just revel in the graciousness of a God who could save people like us.